Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Sidious Mag Podcast. I'm Chris Chavez, and this is my show where I chat with some of the biggest names on the track, on the roads, within the coaching ranks, and across the running industry. Our guests sit down and open up in depth to share their experiences, brilliant insights, and vivid snapshots from their professional and personal accomplishments in the sport. The presenting sponsor of the Sidious Mag Podcast is Olipop, healthy meets delicious. We've been looking for a drink sponsor for a while, and when we were introduced to Olipop, we were blown away. I was first drawn to the cans when I was shopping around at Whole Foods. Olipop is a new kind of soda. They combine prebiotics, plant fibers, and botanical extracts to support your digestive health with 9 grams of fiber, just 2 to 5 grams of sugar, and 45 calories or less in each can. The taste is fantastic, and you don't even realize how good it is for your gut health. It's free of artificial flavors, colors, preservatives, and sweeteners. We'll be sipping it on all of our shows, and we invite you to crack open and cheers an Olipop with us. Visit drinkolipop.com, it's spelled O-L-I-P-O-P, to learn more. Sidious Mag Podcast listeners get 25% off non-subscription orders by using code SIDIOUS25 at checkout. You can also pick them up at a store. They're available at Whole Foods, Sprouts, Kroger, Target, Walmart, Publix, HEB. Visit drinkolipop.com for more information and use code SIDIOUS25 for your listener discount. This show is also supported by listeners like you. Across podcasts, newsletters, videos, articles, and social media, we hope to continue bringing you the most comprehensive coverage of track and field in 2023. If you want to throw your support behind us, we're on Patreon. Contribute whatever you feel most comfortable with to keep us going strong. Thanks to Kathy McGrady-Getz for joining the Loyal Legion of Backers. If you're interested in pledging any contribution, visit us at patreon.com/sidiousmag. We're also on Venmo for those of you who want to support the show and get a shout out in the next episode. Valley Voices sent us a nice tip saying, let's pass out some high fives and tell people that they're awesome. You got it. Rob Economy also threw us $26.20. I get it, and I appreciate it. The other way you can support us is by leaving a nice review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Just last week, we had someone say, this is it. You found it. The Mecca of Running Podcast. Really enjoy all of the content Sidious Mag puts out on a regular basis to keep us fans in the loop on all things running. Keep up the great work. We need more reviews and ratings like that so that new people can continue to discover the show when we appear on the charts. Thanks again to everyone for their support. My guest for today's episode is 2016 Olympic champion, 2019 world champion, the second fastest woman of all time, and one of the most accomplished female 400-meter hurdlers ever. It's the one and only Dalila Muhammad of Jamaica, Queens. As a Queens kid, you know I had to shout him out. If we go back to when she was 4 years old, she was discovered by the New York Novice Track Club and then went on to become a world youth champion, NCAA All-American at USC, and turned pro before becoming the most decorated 400-meter hurdler in American history. She's got a world championship medal of every color after taking bronze in last year's epic 400-meter hurdle final in Eugene while pretty injured. You'll get that backstory soon. We'll discuss how she's managed to unlock this longevity. We'll talk about her struggles and triumphs, and of course, get her thoughts on the future of the 400-meter hurdles led by Sydney McLaughlin herself and Femke Bol. Oh, also a little 800-meter talk. So without further ado, here is Dalila Muhammad. All right, Dalila, it's 2023, brand new year. I guess, like, where's your excitement level at, I guess, after the last couple of years? It's Olympics, Worlds, we got another Worlds, and then we're Olympics next year. So your excitement levels, I guess, for the sport going into a new year, where are they at?
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm really, really excited. You know, last season, I didn't quite have the season I wanted to have. Finished with a medal, got bronze. But just dealing with a lot of injuries. I'm just excited to have an injury-free season. Hopefully 2023 brings that. And yeah, I'm just looking forward to just getting out there competing, get back on the 4x4, do some more 400s, and just, yeah, have a good year.
So I remember years ago, you told me about just how back in 2019, when we met up in New York City, right after you had broken the world record, just about how the fall is the toughest part of the year, because it's the fall season, and that's when you're going over distance sometimes in practice. So the fall's behind us now, I guess. How was it? How did everything go?
My fall's been really good. You know, we kind of changed it up this little bit this year, so it hasn't been like crazy over distance. And my coach is like really known for that. He just kind of switches it up on us every single year. So this fall actually hasn't been too bad in terms of just like running really long. I had a good fall training, but nothing crazy. No repeat miles like I was doing, you know, back in 2019.
You started running track back when you were like 7 years old, and now here we are. It's like, you know, 2 decades worth of being involved in the sport. Do you feel like kind of the veteran, especially like being here with the agency, you know, HSI that represents you, and just like all the other athletes in here? It's like some of these people are just out of college. You're like, I've been in this game for a while.
I do feel like the veteran. I'm gonna say I truly, truly do. I think I've had that moment for a while where I was like, I kind of feel like not really there yet. I feel like in the middle. Now I definitely feel like the vet, like 100%. I'm turning 33 in February, and my training partner is turning 23, and our birthdays are a week apart. So when she told me how old she was turning, I was like, wow, we are 10 years apart. Like, yes, I definitely feel like the vet. Still feel young at heart, you know, of course, but and I just feel like I have such a different perspective, and I see that now, especially with the younger kids coming out of college and just the information that they have yet to obtain, and just the sport of just navigating track and field. And I definitely feel like the one with the answer, so to speak. So definitely feeling like the vet, it's a good time. It's definitely actually a lot more fun than it was when I was the new one on the scene.
And I think the coolest part is that just with the advances in like whatever it might be, the spikes, the track, you know, just training methods, it's like age doesn't really, like, why put a number on it in terms of just like a ceiling? Like, you could see, you could possibly keep this thing going till, I don't know, in some cases 40 seems like an extreme. But for you, I guess mentally, how do you approach, just do you take it year by year? Do you look at it as like through Olympic cycles? How do you look at the sport and kind of frame your life?
Well, I definitely will not be doing it until I'm 40, but thank you for that. I appreciate the boost of confidence. I think it is just a year by year thing with me. It's been that. I think for so many times you kind of think about that kind of Olympic cycling and thinking, okay, let me build this up for the next 4 years. But I think having, you know, the success that I've had through the years, it makes it a little bit different coming into each season. It's kind of just like, what else do I want to do just for me? Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a different perspective. It's kind of like, oh man, I need to get an Olympic gold. I want to get this world record. It's like, having done those things, it's kind of like now, it's just like, I'm just having fun, and it doesn't feel like that same type of pressure that it felt like in years past to like do it. It's just like, no timeline for me too. It's just like, I'm going to keep working until it gets there, because I just want to. It doesn't feel like I'm so set on having to do it on a time or anybody's time other than mine.
I try and think of like Ashton Eaton when in 2016, he was in a similar boat to, you know, position you were in once, where it was Olympic gold medal, you had that, and he had the world record in the decathlon, and you know, it was 2 Olympic gold medals for him, where he's kind of just like, I'm done. Like, I've done everything I've wanted to do in the sport. After you found yourself in, you know, 2019, what kind of fed that hunger to stay involved in the sport? Is it just sort of like continuing to push it, and like, I guess part of it too, Sydney being like right on your heels, has that kind of been the big driving factor of why you've extended it beyond, for I guess now 4 years since 2019? It's just nuts.
I mean, the easiest and simplest and most honest answer is just because I'm still running really, really well.
Yeah.
You know, I think I'm still top 3 in the world at 33. So it's just like, why would I stop? Mm-hmm. You know, it's, you know, yeah, you've done it, you've accomplished it, but you're still really, really one to talk about in the sport. Still, I think, you know, if it was, it would be a different story if it's just like, I'm kind of going backwards, and I'm, you know, I've had injuries here and there, but I still feel like I can run faster. I think that's been a huge driving force. Like you said, there are those athletes, Sydney, Femke, that's running extremely well. And just kind of being in that bunch with them, it still feels like a rivalry there. I've just kind of excited and just kind of having fun doing it. And it doesn't feel like the pressure. I feel like the pressure's on them. So it's off me now, and I'm just having fun.
That's awesome. So what are the fun parts of the job? Because I guess there's also incentives. You walked the runway for Louis Vuitton last year. You traveled to all these amazing places around the globe. Like, what are the fun parts to being a professional track athlete at this level?
Well, those are definitely two things, I think, perks that kind of came along with the job that I didn't expect. I did a photo shoot for Skims. That was definitely just fun. So, yeah, I think it's just those type of things, like those experiences you get to do in life that you didn't necessarily think you were going to get to do. Mm-hmm. So it's just been a fun experience just meeting new people and getting to travel the world. I've definitely been making a point more to see the places that I travel when we go to these Diamond League meets or just any world championships that's not in the U.S. Just really seeing the places that we get to see, like, mm-hmm. I mean, that we get when we travel.
So I remember when we worked on the Sports Illustrated story, breaking down the race in Des Moines, the first time you broke the world record, that I just loved hearing just all the little details of just even like switching legs at one point, and just it wasn't the perfect race, but it still got the job done and took down a record that had, you know, stood for whatever it was, 16, 19 years before that. And now, in the last 4 years, it seems like you, Femke, and Sydney have just unlocked a whole nother level in the 400 hurdles. Technically, what changed? Like, what are the little things that maybe us as a casual viewer who watch these races on TV, what changed about the way that the three of you are running the 400 hurdles?
I think we just changed it into a sprint. And I think before that, it was kind of, you're kind of pacing yourself through the 400 hurdles, and it was kind of this slow build. Like, the first hurdle was extremely slow. Even if you look at like what the previous world record, like what her splits were, and you see, like, I think it's like, I might be wrong, but I think it's like 6-2 to the first hurdle. And that was like the perfect race. We're running like 5-7 to the first hurdle.
Wow.
So that's a huge difference. And that's 10 times, so maybe like 5-9. But even that's like still a huge difference from what it was. Just to put that much speed in the beginning over the first three hurdles versus like what it used to be. And we're going all out. I think that's really been like the difference. Just how you approach the event has been such a huge difference. Just making it a true sprint and no longer just trying to play the strength game.
I know you can't let yourself worry about what they're doing in practice and all that stuff, but how did things change for you in training over, you know, to not just like stay at the top, but keep up with, you know, how fast your competitors are getting? So was it just more strength work or more speed work? And, you know, we've seen you just run some flat races here and there as well without the hurdle. Mm-hmm. So how did training change?
I think for me it's, we put in those distance, we put in that mileage. It's really just been kind of getting the flat four faster and mm-hmm. being a better quarter miler, being on the 4x4. That definitely made a difference. Like, having that approach, like, I don't want to just be a 400 hurdler. I want to be in the relay pool. And I think once we kind of changed that kind of thought process, like, how do we become a quarter miler and not just, oh, she's a 400 hurdler, it's been like, okay. So doing more those type of workouts, but it's just like straight speed endurance, like kind of running like 200, 30 seconds rest, 200 again, like all out, like seeing that type of speed endurance type of work.
I just remember 2013, Brandon Johnson having made the transition from 400 hurdler to running 143 for the 800 on the men's side, that I'm still enticed. Like, I want to see you run an all out 800 at some point.
You know, honestly, I do too. I think we're at that point where it's just like, why not? Shamir just ran something crazy good in the 600, her yep. and Britton Wilson. I'm just like, mm-hmm. I run that time, but I've put up good times at training. I'm like, you know what, let's go for it. I want to see too. So maybe one day, we'll see, why not?
Yeah, look into that camera and tell meet organizers, hey, you got an extra lane in an 800?
I do, I want to run the 800. I don't know if it'll be this year. We'll see how this outdoor season goes. But yeah, early meets, put me in the 800. Let's do it.
I love it. One thing I read about you online, just kind of in just researching things, and I kind of got this vibe, except just before this, you guys had like the team bonding activities, and it sounded like it got really competitive in there. And you once did an interview where you said, I'm not the type of person that has to win at bowling or to win at board games. It's just like, you're able to just switch it on and off. When you switch that drive to, you know, be a competitor? When does that happen? Is it in the call room? Is it, you know, when you're getting into the blocks? That competitive side of Dalila Muhammad, when does that turn on?
It turns on off the track, you know, and I don't mean just going into the meets. I mean, even at practice. I think, you know, I'm a different person when I step on that track to go training than I am once I step off. And it's like, okay, we're friends again. It's like, you know, let's have fun. Like, let's do that. I think for me, that's kind of how I've always approached it, how it's been, like, just on the track. And I don't know what that reason is, but it's been like that even for me as a child. So, yeah, and it's still like that to this day.
Another thing I learned was that when you were younger, you would study your competitors' races and just, like, look for different things so that you can improve. Are you still sort of that student of the sport, you know, whether that is going back and watching, okay, that's when, you know, Femke accelerated on that into and attacked that hurdle? And so are you still that tactical, or do you leave that to Coach Johnson?
No, I am 100%. I think for me, it's been such a natural kind of just process for me too. There are races, like, you know, everyone doesn't always want to rewatch their race. But for me now, it's like I definitely make a point to, like, rewatch all my races even, too, to just kind of see, like, what it looked like, even the ones that I didn't do well in, or definitely all my competitors. It's just like, I just feel like you have to know that information, and why not? It's on video. Watch it.
Do you have any interest in coaching ever?
I always say no, to be honest.
Really?
I literally always say that, but I think it's something that I'm going to get pulled into whether I like it or not.
So last year in particular, so the hurdle race in Eugene, the final, how do you explain what happened? Because it was, I feel like the whole stadium was just in a state of shock. So from your perspective, when did that race, I guess, like, really break open?
Oh, man. You know, that was a tough race for me just personally. I think I just wasn't really running where I needed to be run. The fitness level wasn't there yet. Speed, I didn't have, like, hardly any races, kind of getting injury, just having so many injuries. We kind of really discussed just pulling me out of the race in general.
The final?
Well, not the final.
Oh, just the Worlds.
Worlds in general.
Because you did miss USAs, right?
I did miss USAs, and it was due to injury, and we're kind of trying to downplay this injury.
Yeah.
Like, let's just keep hopes, because I'm like, if I say I'm too injured, then they might just want to pull me. And I was like, and I haven't really decided if I truly think, like, can I heal in time? So it was kind of just like a lot of back and forth, like, let's just kind of play this down a little bit, and then let's see what happens at World. So finally we made the decision, like, let's do this. Like, I think I can do it. And it was literally maybe a week before Worlds. And it was just like, I don't want to give up the chance of getting a medal. And I feel like I can potentially get a medal. And that was kind of a different perspective for me kind of going into a championship. So it was never like, normally I'm like, I'm going to win, like, you know, first or nothing at all. But it was just like my mind, like, going into it was kind of weird for me, just thinking, are you just really fighting for only a medal?
Which is, yeah.
Sounds maybe crazy to some people to say only a medal. But for me, since it's been such all or nothing kind of thing, it was just kind of like, is that what we're fighting for? So I got to be a spectator a little bit in that race and watch Sydney freaking kill it. I think I said after my in an interview, like, right after, I was like, wow, I've literally never had somebody run past me like that in a 400 hurdles, like, and it was nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
And that was just insane to, like, I'm like, I know she was going to kill it, but I don't think any of us thought 50.6. And I was just like, in that race, I saw her fly by. I'm just like, okay, go get it, girl. And I actually, like, tripped up too a little bit at hurdle 8. I was like, hit the hurdle. I think you kind of just caught in the moment of, like, what's happening around you.
Mm-hmm.
And then I knew Femke was there too, so it was just kind of like, just fight all the way home and see what happens. But yeah, that was a crazy race.
Rye had that perspective too, I think, like, after he got his silver medal, that it was just like, yeah, this one is silver, but it's got a different shine to it. Because, you know, for him, he had COVID, and, like, the build up to USA's wasn't perfect. And he's like, so, like, I can hold, like, this silver is a different kind of silver than the one that he got at the Olympics. So you thought of it similarly.
Yeah, I think I did. I was just proud of, like, what I could accomplish in the time frame. But the injuries and just what me and my coach just were able to kind of just keep it together in a sense, and just really push to try to you know, get a medal. And it did complete my set. So I do have gold, bronze, and silver in that, in the 400 meter hurdle. So that's a little, I guess, I don't know, just a little bit enjoyment of just my own, just having a complete set. I don't know why I kind of enjoyed that, but yeah.
So can you take us through like what that looked like in terms of just like not, knowing you're not at 100%, what percentage would you put it at like when you got to Eugene for Worlds?
You know, when I got to Eugene's, we probably got there about like 2 weeks early, and I still couldn't even sprint. Like I couldn't get up to 100%.
Wow.
Like at all. Like I was probably able to get up to about like 70%.
Wow. And so then, like, if you're just trying to get to the healthiest you can to the starting line, what does that look like in the hotel? Is it just like physio, seeing the physio or whoever it might be?
Three times a day.
Wow. What about in between rounds? What happened there?
And I would see him between rounds, and it was maybe just a couple of days before, and I literally was like, okay, I can sprint. And it wasn't like I'm 100% healed, but it was just like enough to where I can make it around for the 400 hurdles. And we really just had to focus on just the strength part of a 400 hurdles. Mm-hmm. It was just kind of like changing the race plan, going out slower, and just kind of, actually not even going out slower, but just running like perfectly even. Yeah. I was trying to run like 52. I was like, I think 52 will get me the medal. Like if I can just, I didn't quite run 52, but it was kind of just like run 13, 13, 13, 13 around this track and see what happens if I could do that.
Has the collective thinking now sort of changed? Like, okay, you're healthy going into this upcoming year, and you know, to be top three in the world and in those conditions, like it does something for your confidence, I'm sure, but also just like how fast Sydney ran, like it elevates everyone else thinking like, okay, that's possible.
You know, I definitely think she definitely made it seem like it was possible 100%. I think it also just, you know, I don't know if it really boosts my confidence though, having all those things, to be honest. I don't know, you would think it would, and maybe it should, but for me, it's just kind of like, okay, let's just work on getting healthy and let's just see what we can do. That's where the headspace is.
When you describe just how the 400 hurdles races have changed and how now it's just a sprint from the start, do you know, I guess, like how much room for error do you have? Like back in 2019 when you switched up the legs in, what was it, at hurdle 8 or 9 before,
yeah,
in Des Moines?
Eight.
That like, that's a little mistake. You still got away with, you know, one winning and then also breaking the world record. You don't have that much room for error nowadays.
No, you don't. And I think, you know, that's what makes it challenging, and that's what makes it kind of just, you know, fun and interesting to look at and seeing those like little nuances. And everyone's really doing really good though. The people at the top, I feel like they're doing really good at just kind of running really well under pressure and not making those mistakes. I think that's been part of the game, is like not making any mistakes and just sticking to the exact set pattern that you want to hit and just going for it.
So where do you think the hurdles go from here? I know it's like it's hard to know exactly like what's possible after what happened last year, because that was just like a huge chunk of the record that was taken off. But I mean, everyone thinks that they can go faster.
You know, I think faster. What are we talking? 49?
Yeah. We're laughing now. This will be great when we can, like, it happens.
No, I think it's possible. And honestly, I'm one of these people that has always thought it was possible, though. I think with the women's 400-meter world record, I don't think the 400 hurdle should be that far behind. I always thought the gap was too much of a discrepancy, and that's always kind of how I truly felt. And if the women can run 47, then, yeah, I think we can run 49 or 50 like Sydney just did. And so, yeah, honestly, I think it is possible.
It's incredible. So, Dula, I'm, like, super excited for you this upcoming season. What else are you looking forward to? Like, do you have anything, like, this upcoming year that you want to kind of check off the list, whether it's, like, yeah, maybe, you know, sub-2 in the 800 or whatever you want to throw out there? What are some early goals that you've set for yourself?
Oh, that's a good one. Sub-2 would be nice.
Yeah.
Actually, I just really want to get a better 400. You know what I would like? I look at my PRs, like, on my personal best, and I don't think they're that impressive. like when I on my like world kind of page. Other than my 400 hurdles, I don't think my other times stack it up. So I just honestly want to hit off every single one. Like I want, like by time I retire and I look at that page, I'm impressed by it. Because right now, personally, I'm not impressed. And it's just because I never run these races. Like I'm so only focused on the 400 hurdles. And I just kind of do it at practice and leave it at that. So 2, 4, and 8, I want to see an improvement at.
I think of it as just like you're like an artist who just like painted something beautiful, but you spent so much time looking at it that it's just sort of like you don't think it's all that great. But to the rest of the world, like they're actually like, no, that's actually amazing. So I think your PRs are impressive to 90% of the world.
That, to be fair, I'd probably so. But for me, just personally, I want to see them like, wow, that's an impressive time. Like this can be competitive with the best in the world in all of these races.
I love it. I love that you threw that out there. Dalila, thank you so much for doing this, and I'm excited to see what this year brings for you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
That does it for another episode of the City of Smack podcast. Thanks for listening and supporting. If you enjoyed this episode, share with a friend, leave a review and rating on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. If you want to contribute and support the show, you can also back us on Patreon by visiting patreon.com/cityofsmag or send over any tip or one-time donation over to City of Smack on Venmo. You guys are all the best. Thanks for listening. Legs are feeling good. I'm Chris Chavez. See you next time.